That last point was regrettably true. But since when has this being crazy been a handicap in this section? He leaned back and waited for me to argue the point. Look, do I get leave or don't I? He fumbled through papers on his desk, found one and tore it up. Okay, keep your phone handy. You're subject to recall. Get out. I got. Mary looked up when I came in and gave me the soft, warm treatment again. I said, grab your things, we're leaving. She did not ask where. She simply stood up. I snatched my drink, gulped half of it, and spilled the rest. We went up, and we were out on the pedestrian level of the city before either one of us said anything. Then I asked, now, where do you want to get married? Sam, we discussed that before. Sure we did, and now we're going to do it. Where? Sam, my dear, I will do what you say, but I am bound to tell you that I am still opposed to it. Why? Sam, let's go straight to my apartment. I'd like to cook dinner for you. Okay, you can cook dinner, but not in your apartment. And we get married first. Please, Sam. I heard somebody say, keep pitching, kid. She's weakening. I looked around and found that we were playing to a good-sized gallery. I swept an arm wide, almost clipping the youngster who had given me the advice, and shouted irritably, haven't you people got anything else to do? Go get drunk. Somebody else said, I'd say you ought to take her offer. He won't get a better one. I grabbed Mary by the arm and hurried away from there. I did not say another word until I had gotten her into a cab and closed off the driver's compartment from the lounge. All right, I said gruffly. Why not get married? Let's have your reasons. Why get married, Sam? I'm yours. You don't need a contract. Why? Because I love you. That's one reason, damn it. She did not answer for quite a while. I thought I had offended her. When she did, I could hardly hear her. You hadn't mentioned that before, Sam. Hadn't I? Oh, I must have. I'm sure I have. No, I'm sure. Quite sure that you haven't. Why didn't you? I don't know. Just an oversight, I guess. I'm not right sure what the word love means. Neither am I, she said softly. But I'd love to hear you say it. Say it again, please. Hmm? Okay. I love you. I love you, Mary. Oh, Sam. She snuggled in against my shoulder and began to tremble. I shook her a little. How about you? Me? Oh, I love you, Sam. I do love you. I've loved you ever since... Ever since when? I thought she was going to say that she had loved me ever since I took her place in Project Interview. What she said was, I've loved you ever since you slapped me. Is that logic? The driver was cruising slowly east along the Connecticut coast. I told him just to drive around. I had to wake him up before I could get into Landis in Westport. We went straight to the city hall. I stepped up to a counter in the Bureau of Sanctions and Licenses and said to a clerk there, Is this where we get married? That's up to you, he answered. Hunting licenses on the left, dog licenses on the right. This desk is the happy medium, I hope. He leered at me. I don't like smart boys, and the gag was ancient. Very well, I said stiffly. Will you oblige by issuing us a license?
Sure thing. Everybody ought to get married at least once. That's what I keep telling my old lady.
He got out a large printed form.
Let's have your serial numbers.
We gave them to him. He slid the form into a typer and recorded them.
Now, are either of you married in any other state?
We said that we weren't.
He went on. You're sure now? If you are, don't tell me, so I can put a rider on this showing the other contracts the contract ain't valid.
We told him again that we weren't married anywhere. He shrugged and went on.
Term, renewable, or lifetime? If it's over 10 years, the fee is the same as for lifetime. If it's under 6 months, you don't need this. You get the short form from that vendo machine over there by the hall.
I looked at Mary. She said in a very small voice, lifetime. The clerk looked surprised.
Lady, are you sure you know what you're doing? The renewable contract, with the automatic option clause, is just as permanent, and you don't have to go through the courts if you change your mind.
I said, you heard the lady, put it down.
Okay. Okay. Either party, mutual consent, or binding?
Binding, I answered, and Mary nodded.
Binding it is, he agreed, stroking the typer. Now we come to the meat of the matter. Who pays and how much?
And is it salary or endowment?
I said, salary. I didn't own enough to set up a fund.
At the same time, and in a firm voice, Mary said, neither.
The clerk said, huh?
Neither one, Mary repeated. This is not a financial contract.
The clerk stopped completely, looked at me, and then looked at Mary. Now look, lady, he said reasonably. Don't be foolish. You heard the gentleman say he was willing to do the right thing.
No.
And you better talk it over with your lawyer before you go ahead with this. There's a public communicator out in the hall.
No.
Well, I'm darned if I see what you need a license for.
Neither do I, Mary told him.
You mean you don't want to do this?
No.
Put it down the way I told you.
No salary.
The clerk looked helpless, but bent over the typer again. I guess that's all we need, he said finally.
You've kept it simple, I'll say that for you.
Do you both solemnly swear that the above facts are true to the best of your knowledge and belief, that you are entering into this agreement uninfluenced by drugs or other illegal inducements, and that there exist no other covenants or other legal impediments to the execution and registration of the above contract?
We both said that we did, and we were, and it was, and there weren't.
He pulled the form out of the typer.
Let's have your thumbprints, okay?
That'll be $10, including the federal tax.
I paid him, and he shoved the form into the copier and threw the switch.
Copies will be mailed to each of you, he announced, at your serial number addresses.
Now, what type of ceremony are you looking for? Maybe I can be of help.
We don't want a religious ceremony, Mary told him, and I agreed.
He nodded.
Then I've got just what you're looking for. Old Doc Camley. He's completely non-sectarian. Best stereo accompaniment in town. All four walls and full orchestra. He gives you the whole works. Fertility rites and everything, but dignified. And he tops it off with a fatherly straight-from-the-shoulder word of advice. Makes you feel married.
No. This time I said it.
Oh, come now, the clerk said to me. Think of the little lady. If she sticks by what she just swore to, and I'm not saying she won't, she'll never have another chance. Every girl is entitled to a formal wedding. Honest. I don't get much of a commission out of it. I said, see here, you can marry us, can't you? Go ahead, get it over with. He looked surprised and said, didn't you know? In this state, you marry yourself. You've been married ever since you thumbprinted the license. I said, oh. Mary didn't say anything. We left. I hired a duo at the landing flat north of town. The heap was 10 years old and smelled of it. But it had full automatic, and that was all that really mattered. I looped around the city, cut across Manhattan Crater, and set the controls. We didn't talk much. There didn't seem to be much to say just yet. I was happy, but terribly nervous. And then Mary put her arms around me, and after a bit I wasn't nervous any longer, but happier than ever. After a long time that seemed short, I heard the beep, 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 beep of the beacon at my shack in the mountains, whereupon I unwound myself, took over manual, and landed. Mary said sleepily, where are we? At my cabin in the mountains, I told her. I didn't know that you had a cabin in the mountains. I thought you were headed for my apartment. What? And risk those bear traps? Anyhow, it's not mine. It's ours. She kissed me again and I loused up the landing. She slid out ahead of me while I was securing the board. Then I followed and found her staring at my shack. Sweetheart, it's beautiful. You can't beat the Adirondacks, I agreed. There was a slight haze with the sun low in the west, giving that wonderful depth upon depth stereo look that you never get anywhere else. I picked this place for the view. She glanced at it and said, yes. Yes, but I didn't mean that. I meant our cabin. Let's go inside right now. Suits, I agreed. But it's really just a simple shack. Which it was. Not even an indoor pool. I had kept it that way on purpose. When I came up here, I didn't want to feel that I had brought the city with me. The shell was conventional steel and fiberglass construction, but I had had it veneered in duro slabs, which could not be told from real logs unless you took a knife to them. The inside was just as simple. A big living room with a real wood-burning fireplace, deep, plain-colored rugs, and plenty of low chairs. The services were all in a compacto special, the shell of which was buried under the foundation. Air conditioner, power pack, cleansing system, sound equipment, plumbing, radiation alarm, servos. Everything but the deep freeze and the other kitchen equipment. Out of sight and out of mind. Even the stereo screens were covered up and would not be noticed unless in use. It was about as near as a man could get to a real log cabin and still have inside plumbing. I think it's just lovely. Mary said seriously. I wouldn't want to have an ostentatious place. You and me both. I worked the combo, and the front door dilated. Mary went inside at once. Hey! Come back here, I yelled. She did so. What's the matter, Sam? Did I do something wrong? You sure did. I dragged her back to me, then swung her up in my arms, and carried her across the threshold. I kissed her as I put her down. There. Now you are in your own house. Properly. The lights had come on as we entered the house. She looked around her, then turned and threw her arms around my neck. Oh, darling. Darling. I can't see. My eyes are all blurry. Mine were blurry, too. So we took time out for mutual treatment. Then she started wandering around, touching things. Sam, if I had planned it all myself, it would have been just this way. It hasn't but one bathroom, I apologized. We'll have to rough it a bit. I don't mind. In fact, I'm glad. Now I know you didn't bring any of those women of yours up here.
What women?
You know darn well what women. If you had been planning this as a nest, you would have included a woman's bathroom.
You know too much.
She didn't answer, but wandered on out into the kitchen. I heard her squeal.
What's the matter?
I asked, following her out.
I never expected to find a real kitchen in a bachelor's lodge.
I'm not a bad cook myself. I wanted a kitchen, so I bought one.
I'm so glad.
Now I will cook you dinner.
It's your kitchen, sit yourself.
But don't you want to wash up? You can have first crack at the shower if you want to, and tomorrow we'll get a catalog and you can pick out a bathroom of your own. We'll have it flown in.
No hurry, she said. You take the first shower. I won't start dinner.
So I did. I guess she did not have any trouble figuring out the controls and filing system in the kitchen. For about 15 minutes later, while I was whistling away in the shower, letting the hot water soak in, I heard a tap on the shower door. I looked through the translucent panel and saw Mary silhouetted there.
May I come in? She called out.
Sure, sure, I said. Plenty of room. I opened the door and looked at her. She looked good. For a moment she stood there, letting me look, but with a sweet shyness on her face that I had never seen before. I put on an expression of utter surprise and said, Honey, what's the matter? Are you sick? She looked startled out of her wits and said,
Me? What do you mean?
There's not a gun on you anywhere. She giggled and came at me.
Idiot, she squealed, and started to tickle me.
I got her left arm in a bone breaker, but she countered with one of the nastiest judo tricks that ever came out of Japan. Fortunately, I knew the answer to it, and then we were both on the bottom of the shower, and she was yelling, Let me up! You're getting my hair all wet.
Does it matter? I asked, not moving. I liked it there.
I guess not, she answered softly and kissed me. So I let her up, and we rubbed each other's bruises and giggled. It was quite the nicest shower I have ever had. Mary and I slipped into domesticity as if we had been married for 20 years. Oh, not that our honeymoon was humdrum. Far from it. Nor that there weren't a thousand things we still had to learn about each other. The point was that we already seemed to know the necessary things about each other that made us married. Especially Mary. I don't remember those days too clearly, yet I remember every second of them. I went around feeling gay and a bit confused. My Uncle Egbert used to achieve much the same effect with a jug of corn liquor. But we did not even take tempest pills. Not then. I was happy. I had forgotten what it was like to be happy. I had not known that I was not happy. Interested, I used to be, yes. Diverted. Entertained, amused, but not happy. We did not turn on a stereo. We did not read a book. Except that Mary read aloud some Oz books that I had. Priceless items they were, left to me by my great-grandfather. She had never seen any. But that did not take us back into the world. It took us farther out. The second day, we did go down to the village. I wanted to show Mary off. Down there they think I am a writer, and I encouraged the notion. So I stopped to buy a couple of tubes and a condenser for my typer, and a roll of copy tape. Though I certainly had no intention of doing any writing, not this trip.
I got to talking to the storekeeper about the slugs and schedule bareback, sticking to my public persona, of course. There had been a local false alarm, and a native in the next town had been shot by a trigger-happy constable for absent-mindedly showing up in public with a shirt. The storekeeper was indignant. I suggested that it was his own fault. These were war conditions. He shook his head. The way I see it, we would have no trouble at all if we attended to our own business. The Lord never intended men to go out in space. We should junk the space stations and stay home. Then we would be all right. I pointed out that the slugs came here in their own ships. We did not go after them, and got a warning signal from Mary not to talk too much. The storekeeper placed both hands on the counter and leaned toward me. We had no trouble before space travel. He'll grant that. I conceded the point. Yeah, well? He said triumphantly. I shut up. How can you argue? We did not go into town after that, and saw no one and spoke to no one. On the way home, we were on foot. We passed close to the shack of John the Goat, our local hermit. Some say that John used to keep goats. I know he smelled like one. He did what little caretaking I required, and we respected each other. That is, we saw each other only when strictly necessary, and then as briefly as possible. But, seeing him, I waved. He waved back. He was dressed as usual, stocking cap, an old army blouse, shorts and sandals. I thought of warning him that a man had been shot nearby for not complying with the bare-to-the-waist order, but decided against it. John was the perfect anarchist. Advice would have made him only more stubborn. Instead, I cupped my hands and shouted, "Send up the pirate!" He waved again, and we went on without coming within 200 feet of him, which was about right, unless he was downwind. "Who's the pirate, darling?" Mary asked. "You'll see." Which she did. As soon as we got back, the pirate came in, for I had his little door keyed to his own meow, so that he could let himself in and out. The pirate, being a large and rakish tomcat, half red Persian and half traveling salesman. He came in strutting, told me what he thought of people who stayed away so long, then head-bumped my ankle in forgiveness. I reached down and roughed him up. Then he inspected Mary. I was watching Mary. She had dropped to her knees and was making the sounds used by people who understand cat protocol. But the pirate was looking her over suspiciously. Suddenly he jumped into her arms and commenced to buzz like a faulty fuel meter, while bumping under her chin. I sighed loudly. "That's a relief," I announced. "For a moment, I didn't think I was going to be allowed to keep you." Mary looked up and smiled. "You need not have worried. I get along with cats. I'm 2/3 cat myself." "What's the other third?" She made a face at me. "You'll find out." She was scratching the pirate under the chin. He was stretching his neck and accepting it, with an expression of indecent and lascivious pleasure. I noticed that her hair just matched his fur. "Old John takes care of him while I'm away," he explained. "But the pirate belongs to me, or vice versa." "I figured that out," Mary answered. "And now I belong to pirate too, don't I, pirate?" The cat did not answer, but continued his shameless lollygagging. But it was clear that she was right. Truthfully, I was relieved. Allurophobes cannot understand why cats matter to allurophiles.
But if Mary had turned out not to be one of the lodge, it would have fretted me. From then on, the cat was with us, or with Mary, almost all the time, except when I shut him out of our bedroom. That I would not stand for, though both Mary and the pirate thought it small of me. We even took him with us when we went down to the canyon for target practice. I suggested to Mary that it was safer to leave him behind, but she said, "See to it that you don't shoot him. I won't." I shut up, somewhat stung. I am a good shot, and remain so by unrelenting practice at every opportunity, even on my honeymoon. No, that's not quite straight. I would have skipped practice on that occasion, had it not turned out that Mary really liked to shoot. Mary is not just a good trained shot. She is the real thing. An Annie Oakley. She tried to teach me, but it can't be taught. Not that sort of shooting. I asked why she carried more than one gun. "You might need more than one," she told me. "Here, take my gun away from me." I went through the motions of a standing face-to-face disarm, bare hands against gun. She avoided it easily and said sharply, "What are you doing? Disarming me or asking me to dance? Make it good." So, I made it good. I'll never be a match metal shot, but I stood at the top of my class in bar room. If she had not given in to it, I would have broken her wrist. I had her gun. Then I realized that a second gun was pressing against my belly button. It was a lady's social gun, but perfectly capable of making 24 widows without recharging. I looked down, saw that the safety was off, and knew that my beautiful bride had only to tense one muscle to burn a hole through me. Not a wide one, but sufficient. "When in the deuce did you find that?" I asked. And well I might, for neither one of us had bothered to dress when we came out. The area was very deserted, and often it did not seem worthwhile to take the trouble. It was my land. So I was much surprised, as I would have sworn that the only gun Mary had with her was the one she had carried in her sweet little hand. "It was high up on my neck, under my hair," she said demurely. "See?" I looked. I knew a phone could be hidden there, but I had not thought of it for a gun. Though, of course, I don't use a lady-sized weapon, and I don't wear my hair in long flame-colored curls. Then I looked again, for she had a third gun shoved against my ribs. "Where did that one come from?" I asked. She giggled. "Sheer misdirection. It's been in plain sight all the time." She wouldn't tell me anything further, and I never did figure it out. She should have clanked when she walked, but she did not. Oh my, no. I found I could teach her a few things about hand-to-hand, which salved my pride. Bare hands are more useful than guns, anyhow. They will save your life oftener. Not that Mary was not good at it herself. She packed sudden death in each hand, and eternal sleep in her feet. However, she had the habit, whenever she lost a fall, of going limp and kissing me. Once, instead of kissing her back, I shook her and told her she was not taking it seriously. Instead of cutting out the nonsense, she continued to remain limp, let her voice go an octave lower, and said, "Don't you realize, my darling, that these are not my weapons?" I knew that she did not mean that the guns were her weapons. She meant something older and more primitive. True, she could fight like a bad-tempered Kodiak bear, and I respected her for it. But she was no Amazon. An Amazon doesn't look that way with her head on a pillow. Mary's true strength lay in her other talents. Which reminds me. From her, I learned how it was that I was rescued from the slugs. Mary herself had prowled the city for days, not finding me, but reporting accurately the progress with which the city was being secured. Had she not been able to spot a possessed man, we might have lost many agents fruitlessly, and I might have never gotten free from my master. As a result of the data she brought in, the old man drew back and concentrated on the entrances and exits to the city. And I was rescued, though they weren't waiting for me in particular. At least, I don't suppose they were. Or maybe they were. Something Mary said led me to think that the old man and she had worked watch on and watch off. Heel to toe, covering the city's main launching platform, once it was evident that there was a focal point active in the city. But that could not have been correct. The old man would not have neglected his job to search for one agent. I must have misunderstood her. I never got a chance to pursue the subject. Mary did not like digging into the past. I asked her once why the old man had relieved her as a presidential guard. She said, "I stopped being useful at it," and would not elaborate. She knew that I eventually would learn the reason, that the slugs had found out about sex, thus rendering her no longer useful as a touchstone for possessed males. But I did not know it then. She found the subject repulsive and refused to talk about it. Mary spent less time borrowing trouble than anyone I ever knew. So little that I almost forgot, during the holiday from the world, what it was we were up against. Although she would not talk about herself, she let me talk about myself. As I grew still more relaxed and still happier, I tried to explain what had been eating me all my life. I told her about resigning from the service and the knocking around I had done before I swallowed my pride and went to work for the old man. "I'm a peaceable guy," I told her. "But what's the matter with me? The old man is the only one I've ever been able to subordinate myself to, and I still fight with him. Why, Mary? Is there something wrong with me?" I had my head in her lap. She picked it up and kissed me. "Heavens, boy, don't you know? There's nothing really wrong with you. It's what's been done to you. But I've always been that way. Until now." "I know. Ever since you were a child. No mother, and an arrogantly brilliant father. You've been slapped around so much that you have no confidence in yourself." Her answer surprised me so much that I reared up. "Me? No confidence in myself?" "Huh?" I said. "How can you say that? I'm the cockiest rooster in the yard." "Yes. Well, you used to be. Things will be better now." And there's where it stood. For she took advantage of my change in position to stand up and say, "Let's go look at the sunset." "Sunset?" I answered. "Can't be. We just finished breakfast." But she was right, and I was wrong. A common occurrence. The mix-up about the time of day jerked me back to reality. "Mary, how long have we been up here? What's the date?" "Does it matter?" "You're darn right it matters. It's been more than a week, I'm sure. One of these days our phones will start screaming, and then it's back to the treadmill." "In the meantime, what difference does it make?" She was right, but I still wanted to know what day it was. I could have found out by switching on a stereo screen, but I would probably have bumped into a newscast, and I did not want that. I was still pretending that Mary and I were away in a different world, a safe world, where titans did not exist. "Mary," I said fretfully, "how many tempest pills have you?" "None." "Well, I've got enough for both of us. Let's stretch it out. Make it last a long time. Suppose we have just 24 more hours. We could fine it down into a month, subjective time. No. Why not? Let's carpe that old diem before it gets away from us. She put a hand on my arm and looked up into my eyes. No, darling. It's not for me. I must live each moment as it comes, and not let it be spoiled by worrying about the moment ahead. I suppose I looked stubborn, for she went on. If you want to take them, I won't mind. But please, don't ask me to. Confound it! I'm not going on a joyride alone. She did not answer, which is the damnedest way of winning an argument I know of. Not that we argued. If I tried to start one, which I did more than once, Mary would give in, and somehow it would work out that I was mistaken. I did try several times to find out more about her. It seemed to me that I ought to know something about the woman I was married to. To one question she looked thoughtful, and answered presently, I sometimes wonder whether I ever did have a childhood, or was it something I dreamed last night? I asked her point blank what her name was. Mary, she said tranquilly. Mary really is your name, then? I had long since told her my right name, but we had agreed to go on using Sam. Certainly it's my name, dear. I've been Mary since you first called me that. Oh, all right. Your name is Mary. You are my beloved Mary. But what was your name before? Her eyes held an odd, hurt look, but she answered steadily, I was once known as Alukire. Alukire, I repeated, savoring it. Alukire. What a strange and beautiful name. Alukire. It has a rolling majesty about it, my darling. Alukire. My name is Mary now. And that was that. Somewhere, somewhen, I was becoming convinced, Mary had been hurt, badly hurt. But it seemed unlikely that I was ever going to know about it. She had been married before. I was fairly certain. Perhaps that was it. Presently I ceased to worry about it. She was what she was, now and forever, and I was content to bask in the warm light of her presence. Age cannot wither her, nor custom stale her infinite variety. I went on calling her Mary, since she obviously preferred it, and that was how I thought of her anyhow. But the name that she had once had kept running through my mind. Alukire. Alukire. I rolled it around my tongue and wondered how it was spelled. Then I suddenly knew how it was spelled. My pesky pack rat memory had turned up the right tab, and now was pawing away at the shelves in the back of my mind where I keep the useless junk that I didn't think about for years on end and am helpless to get rid of. There had been a community, a colony that used an artificial language, even to given names. The Whitmanites, that was it. The anarchist pacifist cult that got kicked out of Canada, then failed to make a go of it in Little America. There was a book written by their prophet, The Entropy of Joy. I had not read it, but I had skimmed it once. It was full of pseudo-mathematical formulas for achieving happiness. Everybody is for happiness, just as they are against sin. But the cult's practices kept getting them into hot water. They had a curious and yet very ancient solution to their sexual problems, a solution which appeared to suit them, but which produced explosive results when the Whitmanite culture touched any other pattern of behavior. Even Little America had not been far enough away for them. I had heard somewhere that the remnants had immigrated to Venus, in which case they must all be dead by now. I put it out of my mind. If Mary were a Whitmanite, or had been reared that way, that was her business. I certainly was not going to let the cult's philosophy cause a crisis, now or ever. Marriage is not ownership, and wives are not property. If that were all that there was to what Mary did not want me to know about her, then I simply would not know it. I had not been looking for virginity, wrapped in a sealed package. I had been looking for Mary. The next time I mentioned Tempest pills, she did not argue, but suggested that we hold it down to a minimum dose. It was a fair compromise, and we could always take more. I prepared it as injections, so that it would take hold faster. Ordinarily, I watch a clock after I've taken Tempest. When the second hand stops, I know that I'm loaded. But my shack has no clocks, and neither of us was wearing ring watches. It was just sunrise, and we had been awake all night, cuddled upon a big, low half-moon couch in front of the fireplace. We continued to lie there for a long time, feeling good and dreamy, and I was half considering the idea that the drug had not worked. Then I realized that the sun had stopped rising. I watched a bird flutter past the view window. If I stared at him long enough, I could see his wings move. I looked back from it to my wife, admired the long sweep of her limbs and the sudden rising curves. The pirate was curled up on her stomach, a cubicle cat, with its paws tucked in as a muff. Both of them seemed asleep. "How about some breakfast?" I said. "I'm starved." "You fix it," she answered. "If I move, I'll disturb pirate." "You promised to love, honor, and fix me breakfast," I replied, and tickled the soles of her feet. She gasped and drew up her legs. The cat squawked and landed on the floor. "Oh, dear," she said, sitting up. "You made me move too fast, and now I've offended him." "Never mind the cat, woman. You're married to me." But I knew that I had made a mistake. In the presence of others, people not under the drug, one should move with great care. I simply hadn't thought about the cat. No doubt he thought we were behaving like drunken jumping jacks. I intentionally slowed down and tried to woo him. No use, he was streaking toward the door. I could have stopped him, for to me his movement was a molasses crawl,